and gentlemen, friends and rivals. My name is Jared, and with me is my roguish companion, Anna.
Hello.
We will be your hosts for the episode. We are honored and grateful that you have joined us at the Two Top Table today. Here at the Game Table Podcast, we take a look at various board, card, and other tabletop games. We give an overview, provide a little insight on how to play, and share some of our thoughts, all in an attempt to give you an idea of how well it would fit for you and your table. Today, we will be looking at Fateforge Chronicles of Khan, designed by Gordon Kalea, artwork created by Yusuf Artun, Mark Kasha, Max Kosek, Antonio Muntin, Yamanda Daniel Orke, and Arwana Susini, and published by Mighty Boards.
Fateforge Chronicles of Khan is a 1-4 player episodic cooperative campaign where players take on the role of adventurers who embark on a fascinating story through the city of Essaphir. Streamlined combat, app-driven gameplay, and flexible game sessions await in this epic game box of adventure. Does Fateforge Chronicles of Khan find victory in the epic tale it attempts to create? Or does it lead the players to a total party kill, only leaving doubt and despair for those who attempted? Find out as we discuss.
Perfect. All in one take.
So, Jared.
Anna.
We've played a lot of games together.
One or two.
We've also played D&D together.
And separately.
Do you remember your first ever D&D adventure?
I do. It took place in the youth group room at church with some friends who were like, hey, do you want to try out this D&D thing? And I was like, well, I've played RPG video games, so sure, I'll try.
Can't be too different.
It was pretty different. In a good way, though. No, I really am glad that Rick Fox introduced me to D&D because it kind of began what is now a really big piece of my life. And I have had many epic adventures that I've gotten to go on and gotten to help tell. And I'm looking forward to many more going forward. But that first one where I was this dex fighter who was all about trying to make a name for himself in the circus with his pet lion, it was such a cool experience, and I really enjoyed it.
There you go. Well, my first D&D adventure was in my own living room.
That's true.
That is true.
I was there.
You were there. We decided we were going to run a little campaign with some friends of ours. We didn't make it very far into the campaign because we quickly discovered that you need a pretty committed group to go through a D&D adventure together. You need people with schedules that allow to meet regularly and that want to commit a long time to doing that.
And a GM who has time to like commit to creating the story.
Right. And our GM for that very, very first D&D adventure had decided that he wanted to create his whole own world.
What an idiot.
And all sorts of things that made it take a lot more time than he anticipated.
If only he knew that he could just buy a module and run that.
I know. It was sad. He was basically trying to invent an entire game that already existed, and
that
he didn't even
Jared,
know.
Jared, I don't know what to do with him.
So anyway, I want to talk about yours. My first D&D adventure was creating this cute little nerdy artificer who loved my potions and just wanted to stay in my lab creating things. And I got called out on this adventure to talk about these floating islands. And it was really great. And I remember thinking it was so fun to make the character. I remember we had somebody in our party that enjoyed acting and doing the voices and just how much fun it was. And I also remember We just sat all day playing because it was before kids. We created
before
our characters.
Kids.
And then we just played for hours.
What
and
a time.
Then we ordered pizza and I ate an entire pizza all by myself, which, yeah. you know, is a really big source of pride for me.
It is, actually. You bring that up a lot.
Yeah. I was, well, because it's in my Facebook memories. It pops up every year. Where it
Facebook
says,
also knows that it's a big pride point for you.
I can still eat an entire pizza by myself. And I'm like, oh yeah, I could.
Nice.
Anyway, it was a good time, even though it only lasted maybe two or three sessions before it petered out.
Man, can you imagine what the potential now if we...
It was a well done thing
for two or three sessions, honestly.
Like,
that's true. I looking back on it, I was way too critical on myself, but... If we knew then what we know now, and we didn't have kids, the potential of the games and the stories we could have created back then.
Wow. Jared wants to create an alternate reality, everybody.
No, don't get me wrong. I love our kids. I'm just saying, the missed potential back then.
Yeah. No, it was fun. Anyway, there you go.
But this is not straight D&D.
And it is much more laid out for you than even if you bought a D&D module.
Yes.
So no fumbling around trying to create your own world here, which is nice.
It's already created for you. And there's a built-in GM that comes in almost in the box.
Yep.
And so we're going to dive in. I am not going to teach you how to play Fate Forge Chronicles of Khan. It would just take a really long time to go through all the nuances of this game. And I don't think that's a good value for what we're doing here. I do think that between the tutorial that you get in the app and the rule book, it is very easy to just jump right in and start playing.
Yeah.
We kind of did a quick skim of the rules to make sure we kind of understood what we were doing and used the tutorial as our guide to begin with and then referred back to the rules as we needed to. And we were able to really get going.
Yeah.
I wanted this to be a true, like, this is for Anna and I. Can we, with kids, with busy schedules, put this game on the table and get through the campaign?
Mm-hmm.
And it took us a while to do that, as we're going to talk about, but I don't want the lack of rule explanation to have people start thinking, oh, this is too hard. I can't do it.
Yeah. Well, and if I'm remembering the timing of it all, I read through the rule book while Jared downloaded the app and got all the game components out.
Yep.
And then we started the app and went through the tutorial. It was a very short process.
Very streamlined.
Yeah. And like he said, just doing a quick read of the rule book, I knew about where the rules were. The app tells you a lot.
It does.
It tells you a whole lot about rules. And so I really just had to go and look stuff up every now and then. Throughout the gameplay, and yep. the app kind of did the rest for me.
And the rule book, I mean, I know we're kind of jumping ahead here, but it is all tied into how to play, I guess. The rule book is so well laid out.
And yeah, it really is.
Any question that I would have, I don't think I ever truly read the rule book from start to finish like I would most games. I kind of trusted you with that. But anytime I would have a question, I'm like, hey, what's this rule? You could within a very short amount of time, you could reference it and find it. And say, hey, this is what it is.
Yeah.
And so I was really pleased with that.
Yes. And I'll just say, as the one who was doing most of the looking stuff up in the rule book and navigating the app, which we can talk about kind of how we divided responsibilities, because I think we did a good job of that in the game. As the person that was looking at stuff in the rule book most of the time, I completely agree. The headings were wonderful. The pictures were wonderful enough that I could look at a symbol and think, oh, what was that again? Mm-hmm. Flip through the rule book, find it, 30 seconds to look up a rule, which is good because it does a good job of walking you through, but there are quite a few rules to keep in mind as you're going through. So it's good to be able to quickly look them up.
Cool. So I'm going to kind of just quickly walk through this on the how to play, and then we'll dive back into it. So each player is going to control a character. These characters have skills, specific dice that are tied to them, health and energy, an ability that it's unique to each character, and then also slots for weapons, armor, and items. There is an app that we've already alluded to multiple times that provides players with the story, guides you to the beginning of combat and how each scene should be set up. It also tracks your choices and experience so that you don't have to keep up with your own experience points. It just rewards you as you go based on how well you do. It also shows you which cards to pull for each encounter. So Anna would be the one operating the tablet, and I would hear her call out, these are the card numbers that you need. You would pull them out. All of a sudden, you know which enemies you're fighting. It'll tell you how many of those enemies you need. It'll show you where all the different pieces go. And all these pieces are going to fall on different tiles. So there's a...
In battle.
In combat, that's correct. So in combat, it's going to tell you different tile numbers that you need. There's roughly 40 of them. And so you won't use all of them every single time, but I just broke them out into different stacks, and it was very easy to pull the ones that she would call out and then be able to finish setting up with enemies and tokens and things of that nature.
And when you're not in a battle, so the battle is where you put together the tiles and you form your little dungeon crawl thing. And when you're not in a battle, you're using a big map of the city.
That's right.
And you have a miniature that you can put on the location that you're at in the city.
Yeah, and the miniatures are different depending on what you're doing. So if you're in combat, each player has their own miniature to designate who they are. Whereas when you're traveling on the map, you're traveling as a party. And therefore, it's just one miniature that represents the whole party. So some of the things to note during gameplay, this is essentially a dungeon crawler with an awesome story and choice tied to it. And so with a dungeon crawler, like I said, you have those tiles. You're kind of working your way through the dungeon to either defeat all the enemies or you have a specific goal. So maybe you have to like rescue the NPC that you met, or you might have to collect certain things or trigger a certain story moment or things of that nature.
There was like infiltrating places.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you can't just go forever like and try and just wait it out and slowly kill everything. You have a certain number of rounds that you get to be able to actually finish each combat. And at the beginning of each round, players privately roll their dice to kind of to determine what actions they have available to them. So it might be movement or attacking with melee or attacking with range, or it might be something where you can interact, use a special ability, things like that. And these dice are going to tie in with your ability, your skills, and potentially some of the items that you have. And then there's other ways to manipulate the board with various things as well that cost you either energy or other things. And so during combat, you will attempt to complete the objective. If you run out of rounds and you have not completed the objective, there's a way to add an extra round, but it's going to give you a penalty. Typically, when you get that penalty, it's going to be in the form of corruption, and it's going to cause a ongoing negative effect to your character. And there's ways to get rid of that, but it's going to burn through some of your resources. So it's kind of a give and take of having to decide, you know, do I want to do it this way? How fast should I be? And each encounter is very different. It's something that you want to make sure you're paying attention to how the setup works instead of just throwing the tiles down, because you can kind of get an idea of, oh, this is what we should be working towards this time, and this might be the best way to go about it. But once you finish up your combat, it'll take you back out of combat. You can kind of reset the table, bring the map back, and you're referring back to the app to continue through the story. Usually there's going to be either conversational or choices that need to be selected, and you as a table kind of get to decide together what you're going to do.
And there were some puzzles that we came across as well. So there was some conversations. You had to roll skills like persuasion or insight or things like that to see if you noticed things or convinced the character you were talking to of certain things. And most of the puzzles that we had to do with the map and figuring out certain clues we were given about the map. So I think it brings in a lot of other aspects into a, like you said, mainly dungeon crawling game.
Yeah, for sure. And it, with the story element, it really tries to be D&D in board game form without having to have that DM who's preparing stuff all the time.
Yeah. I will mention one more thing about rest scenes and side quests.
Yeah, so I was about to get to that. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're good.
So the game goes in an order where you have a couple of battles and then a rest scene, a couple of battles and then a rest scene, and then a couple of battles and then a boss fight. And there's three different acts of that pattern as you go through the story. And in between the battles that you have to have, there are optional side quests that you may get from characters. And during rest scenes, which happen, like I said, at those intervals in between sets of battles, you have the opportunity to either try to go find more stuff, to talk to more people, to rest and recover, or you can do some of these side quests. And as you go through the game, more opportunities become available to you for rest scenes. But you need to be careful with during rest scenes because you only have a certain amount of time in that rest scene. You can't go around and do everything.
Right.
So if you do a side quest and it takes two time, but you also want to heal and that takes two time, then you can't also go to the blacksmith shop and see if you want to purchase a new piece of armor because you ran out of time.
You also have a limited amount of money too. So
that's true. Yes, you have a limited amount of money as well.
And the last thing that I'll kind of say here, that so Anna talked about how each act is kind of broken up into mini sessions. So this is one of the things that Fateforge is really trying to do to make it more accessible for everybody. You can essentially do a story and combat in an hour or less. And so the structure is there so that if you want to make a night of it and go through a whole act, you can do several of those sessions and kind of have them all together. But the app is constantly saving your progress. So if you decide to finish up a combat and then say, okay, I want to be done for the night, then the app is going to save where you're at so that you can pack it up and then put it back out the next time. And when you open that app back up, it's going to pop you back into the story right where you were before.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's the very long elevator pitch. We'll head back over to the table and discuss. So I want to start just by quickly mentioning the designer, Gordon Kalea. I just want to say a big thank you. So I met Gordon at Gen Con in 2024. It was very interesting because, you know, I was like, okay, my name's Jared. I'm from the Game Table podcast. Would love to hear about some of these games. And I actually wasn't even, originally, I wasn't going for Fateforge. I wanted to hear about a different game that they had coming out. There were several people at the booth. And I just kind of, you know, walked up and he was the one that interacted with me and we started talking. At first, I didn't know who he was until we got into more of the conversation. But we started talking and after I kind of explained who I was, he took like over half an hour to like talk through all the games that they had there. I was very passionate about the things that not only that he had made, but the designs of some of the other people within his within this company. And I did a little bit of research on him, and he's been with Mighty Boards for a while and done several games with them. But Gordon, I just want to say thank you. They did give us a review copy and of Fateforge that we're going to talk about tonight. And I explained to him, I was like, you know, I'll be really interested to see if Fateforge pulls off this streamlined content, because I think for our listeners, it's going to require that to be a good draw. Because I know dungeon crawlers. I'm not usually into dungeon crawlers because of the massive setup, the massive time that it takes, and then packing it all away again, and then having to remember everything about where I was. And so I was intrigued, but also curious. And so I do want to be very clear that these opinions are ours. They gave us no instruction about how to communicate about our review copy. They were just very generous in handing that to us. I was completely blown away by that, but even more so that he would take over half an hour of his precious time at Gen Con to talk to me. So Gordon, again, thank you so much. And really, we're going to talk through this one, but I just want to say congratulations on the success that you guys have had with this, because I know that you've gone through a few different story games, and I'm aware of them, but I think this one, you really nailed it in what you were trying to do. So let's talk about the game.
All right. So we always like to talk about artwork. I know this game has a lot of components. It's got figurines for each character. It's got a figurine for the party. It's got maps. It's got tiles. What do we think about the artwork, Jared?
I really like the artwork. It's an interesting style in the way that it's got this, I don't know how to describe it really, what the technical term is, but it's like this cross between that almost animated, but it's not animated, and it still looks like real life in a way, as far as the different drawings and things of that nature. It all has a very strong D&D feel to it.
Yes, I would agree.
And I really like that.
Very fantasy world.
It does feel very fantasy and very almost mystical in the way that it is put together. I did find out that Fate Forge is also like it's a world within D&D, and it's got its own kind of system. So I think these two are kind of playing off of each other. So it probably was, I mean, it was easy to kind of have those kind of cross over in some of the characters and the different monsters and things like that. But I really liked the miniatures, were really good. They're very distinguished. The player boards were great. I love having boards that have that recessed area to be able to hold pieces.
Yes.
Really helps in any kind of game. It's inevitable. Something will get bumped. Something will happen. And for those pieces to just be able to stay is great.
Yeah, he's talking about the two main resources for characters themselves in battle is health and energy.
Yeah.
So health, obviously, you lose when you get attacked. And energy, you can spend at certain times to move faster or to reroll some dice. But you've got to be careful because you don't get those resources back. So there's a recessed area on the board for available energy and health, and then a recessed area for expended energy and health that you can't get back until you heal. So I agree. And I also thought that it was helpful around the side of the player board that it had spots for everything you're able to carry. So I could see, all right, I have my big knife and my small knife. And if I get another big knife, well, I don't have another spot for that. So I can take that one away. I have my spot for armor.
It was all very clear.
Yeah, it was very, very clear to lay out exactly what we had going on. And as we're talking about the ability to pack the game up and get it back out, which Jared and I did just so many times over the last few months, because sometimes we'd sit down to play and we'd had a have half an hour and we'd be exhausted.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't even have made it through a battle.
But we really wanted to get, we kept wanting to come back.
But we wanted to do it. We wanted to play a little bit. So we would just play a little bit, pack it up, play a little bit, pack it up. Keeping track of the player boards was much easier than I expected. I expected when I got them out, I was going to have to be like, okay, but what skills do I have again? But each player has their own little box with their starting components and a baggie inside. So you can have cards I haven't unlocked yet in the baggie and everything I have unlocked outside the baggie. So it's this very compact way of real-time storing where you're at in the game, which was helpful.
Yeah, I would say for just from the publisher organization, I'm very impressed with the way that they've set up the box. You've got all the different, so all the different monsters and NPCs that you fight are these cardboard tokens. And I was a little interested to see how that actually looked on the table, but I always felt like even though I was a miniature and it was a cardboard just kind of disc,
they're hefty tokens.
They are hefty tokens, and so I was really happy with that. But they all like they sit in these four different boxes, just little cardboard boxes, I guess. And on the outside of the cardboard boxes, they have little icons of which monsters are in there. So the organization of, again, that streamlined process of knowing which box to grab and just I can dump that box, grab the pieces I need, and then put everything back. Very simple, very quick. And from a publisher, I'm very impressed with the organizational side of storage in the box.
And also the tiles that you lay out for the dungeon crawl, I was also very impressed with the artwork on those. I remember
everyone is so unique.
Every
it's so
single
cool.
one is unique.
And double-sided to really use.
They're double-sided. You've got usually one side that's more like light and one side that's more dark. And so the light sides, you have flowers in the field. And on the dark side, you have cobwebs in the corner and old furniture and trunks. And I remember just being blown away the very first time we built the map at how detailed these tile pieces were. And because they didn't have to be. Every single component that you're going to actually interact with in the dungeon, you place.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it wouldn't have had to be such an elaborate artwork on the tiles themselves, but it is. And I think it adds to the feeling of the dungeon. Oh, I'm fighting in the streets now, or oh, I'm fighting in this crazy underground cave now. There was one point in the story where you did have to pay attention to the artwork on the tiles. And I don't know if it would be in every story or not, but in our story, there was one point where we had to pay attention to the artwork on the tiles for a clue that we were given.
Well, and because of the detail on the city map, they were able to incorporate different puzzles that had to do with the actual artwork in the map itself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What was the Point City? No.
You're thinking of Micro Macro.
Yeah, the Micro Macro game that we reviewed a few months ago.
Yeah.
Where it's a super detailed map, and that's the entire game. You just have to figure out puzzles. This map has almost as much detail as that, and it was only the small part of this game. And you could go around the city and figure out puzzles and figure out things because of the great amount of detail on the map.
That was another like added thing where I was like, I mean, this is so cool. They didn't have to do this. Like, they could have just added these parts just into the story, and a normal player probably wouldn't have noticed the difference. But to add that extra bit, I think was just such a cool detail to add.
Yeah, that was another point at which I was blown away, is when we opened up this map and I was just looking at it. And when you do the puzzles on the map, or when you're traveling to places on the map, you actually have to say in the app, I'd like to go northwest now. And then you can look at the map and see the streets and see the landmarks that they travel to. And you're traveling each city block one at a time. And so not only is the map beautiful and very intricate, you get to explore it enough that you get to appreciate its intricacies and details as well.
You definitely feel like you're in the city, which is cool.
100%. Yeah.
I think the other thing that I'll mention as quote unquote artwork is the music that comes with the app. I think that it's, again, not required, but the variety of different music choices and the background noise when you're in the city or wherever was just a nice touch. And it really felt like it added to the whole thing.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I will say this, and we're going to talk about it later. There's a ton of cards. And I want to say we saw half in our campaign. Maybe not even half. I don't think. Like, I think we saw half the story cards, but there's skill cards and there's all these different like item cards, opponents, and they're all different. And it depends on which way you take the story that you see those cards. And so that adds to the replayability of, I can choose to take a different adventure next time, and I'm going to have a completely different experience than what I did the first time around.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've gushed about the way it looks. But for the game itself, what's the draw?
Well, I think the draw for us was we like D&D, but like I mentioned in our little opening example, there is a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes. Even if you are leading people through a kind of a prepackaged scenario, if you want maps, you got to make your own maps. You've got to make your own characters. If you want music, you got to go out and find your own music. You've got a lot to do this role-playing D&D style. And you need a really consistent group that's willing to meet really regularly. And often, you need a pretty good chunk of time, too. It's hard to play in a short amount of time. You don't get through very much of the story. And so it was just fascinating to me that you could fit D&D into a board game. Because we've played story board games before.
Sure.
And I enjoyed the role-playing aspect of them because it felt D&D-like to role-play as the characters in the story.
Yeah.
But it still didn't really feel like D&D because you still didn't have all of the components. And I would say that this comes as close as I can say of any board game that we've played to really feeling like D&D. It has so many of the components with like none of the baggage, I guess. that was the draw for me for sure.
Yeah, I think for me, it was the curiosity, like I said, of can you actually put D&D in a box? And I really think that I agree with you. They did that. They got as close as you can. And again, it's like, it's even thinking back to my comment about, well, I've played video game RPGs, which is still completely separate in its own way from D&D. There's still the limitations in a video game in the same way that there's limitations in a board game versus what you can do in D&D itself. But I love this and the way that it kind of brings it all together. It has the story and the dungeon crawl and the choice and the puzzles and the everything. And really feels like it gives you a full package where you get to say, I'm going on this adventure and I'm committed emotionally to these characters and to the story. And I think that's, I've heard that a lot with dungeon crawlers where they're like, yeah, it's like D&D in a box. And it's like, well, you're getting the combat part of it pretty well, but where's the story? And for you and I, as we talked about in our D&D episode, we're drawn to the story of it.
Yes.
And not that we don't like combat, but we also want that other piece. And this really adds that.
And speaking of story, this game had so many choices. And once you made a choice, that was it. You could not go back and make another choice.
Yeah.
And which at first was kind of scary.
yeah.
Because I remember we had at one point in time where we had to pick who our ally was going to be. And at the time, it just felt like the weightiest decision. We ended up going to bed.
Yeah, we're
and
like,
deciding,
we have to sleep on it.
We're like, we need to sleep on who our allies, who our main ally is going to be, because we couldn't decide between these two different allies. And so we slept on it and talked about it the next day and sat down the next time and still weren't sure. It just felt like this huge weighty decision, because we knew, because we had made other decisions, that once you decide, that's your course for the rest of the game. You can't get two scenes down the road and think, oh, maybe I should have done the other one and go back, like in a choose your own adventure book or in sometimes a regular board game. Like, we would play through scenarios different ways, several different times through some of our other storytelling board games. And we couldn't do that in this one. But what that also means is that I'm excited to play this again. We just finished it not too long ago. We've been playing it for months, and I'm still thinking, man, what if we'd chosen that other ally? What would have happened? And I want to go play it again, because there are those lasting consequences. There are also potentials for numerous plays through with new scenarios. Like Jared mentioned, there's tons of cards that we didn't get to. There's side quests that we weren't able to prioritize with our other rest activities that we needed to do. There were characters that we didn't even meet that we were told about. And we just didn't get to see those in the first playthrough. And I'm really excited to see them in a second playthrough.
I am too. It's so interesting. We talked last week, Ian and I did, about one of the hard things about the podcast is we have to constantly be moving to new games. And this is one of those games that I'm like, I want to play new games for two-player games, but I also really want to do this again. And it's like, really, I've been wrestling with it. Like, okay, how do we bring this back in? Because it's so good. And it really, it draws you in. It really does. I mean, Anna was like, there was a point where I remember you saying, do you even like this game? And I was like, what are you talking about? And like,
he was so frustrated all the time.
Yeah, I was so committed. And then like,
every single bad thing that would happen, oh my goodness, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, man, he's not enjoying himself at all. But what I didn't realize is, sorry, you can tell about your own feelings if you want.
No, I'm very curious from your perspective.
You don't have to have me wife-splain your feelings over here.
No, it's totally cool. No worries.
But what was actually happening was that he was enjoying the game enough that he was reacting as if he was his character to the scenarios that were happening.
Yeah.
So bad things would happen and he wasn't, oh, this is ridiculous, because he actually thought the game was ridiculous. He was reacting as if he was his character getting into frustrated situations. And I didn't realize that. I thought he was just angry at the game for a little bit.
No.
I was like, babe, this is how D&D works. Like, you get injured sometimes. Like,
I know, and I get upset about it. but no, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because that brings to mind a different thought. One of the things I really like about this game is how tight everything is. I remember from how every combat decision feels important because you only have so much time.
Yeah.
And so there are a couple combats, like if you roll really well, you're going to skate through them. But for most combats, we were down to the wire, not sure if we're going to need an extra round, having to take on that penalty, but being able to pull it out just in time. But then another way that it's tight is you go rest for the first time and you're like, oh, this is going to be cool. And you realize how broke you are.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh. Huh.
You realize how much time and resources it's going to take just to heal you from the last battle where you almost died. And
so then you're like, oh, so how do I get stuff? And then it changes your perspective on how you approach each combat, because there's ways to collect money in combat. And so you're like, okay, this was already tight, but can I make it to where I get this jewel and still succeed?
Yeah.
And again, like, you want to succeed, like, you get, I get emotionally invested, you might not, but you get so tied to it that you're like, oh, I really need to, well, I want to do both of these things, but I need to do this. And so there's this nice give and take of everything's really tight. There's no just loosey goose, super easy, but it's not so hard that it feels impossible. It's in that nice range.
Yeah. And it's not even like the earlier scenarios seem easy and then you get to the boss and it's super hard. It scales incredibly well with the character's abilities. Yeah, the very first battle that we fought felt like, oh my goodness, what have we gotten ourselves into? But I think we only ended up completely losing one battle over the course of the whole thing. But I think you died several times.
Yeah, that did happen a lot.
We did have to do extra rounds a couple of times.
It was really interesting because, like, so we played this game two player, which meant we played it straight. We both have one character each.
Yes.
I think you could play this as a two player and operate two characters apiece. Like, you can do it in a lot of co-ops. And I think managing it would be fine. But I wanted to see how it played straight. But it was interesting because I chose an archer and you chose a rogue. And so we got
neither one of us was a tank.
There was no tanking. And so it was this interesting space of like, oh, well, she's going to sneak off and no one can see her. So I'm just going to sit here and take damage, I guess. And then it became part of our strategy. Like, how can I sacrifice myself so that we can get through this?
Yes. And, yeah. Yes. Yes. And I was going to say also with the gathering of the jewels, we like role play. And so as we were role playing our characters, I would sneak off for the treasure chest instead of go the most direct route to the hostage and things like that, because I was the rogue and that's what I was going to do, babe.
I was not always so happy about that, but it's all good.
So, another thing I want to mention about the draw is we are a certain type of people, as we have talked about the kind of games that we enjoy, but this game scales for different types of people and the different kinds of things that they enjoy in games as well. So we mentioned how tight the battles are. Well, if you don't like battles to feel so tight and you don't want to get all caught up in your feelings like Jared did, there's an easy mode that you can turn on that makes the battles a little bit easier. There's also a hardcore mode. If you really like getting kicked in the teeth and you feel like you aren't losing enough, you can turn that on. There's also a battle mode for people that want less story. They can go through it more as just a regular dungeon crawl. There is a solo mode, even if you don't have a good group that can get together regularly to play through this with you. You can play through it yourself with the app. So I was very impressed at the different types of people they took into consideration when they were making this game and the tweaks that they made to make it fun for the different kinds of things people enjoy when they're playing this kind of game.
Yep, I agree. I think the only kind of people that will not, that this is not made for, is the true, pure Euro gamer who doesn't want to roll dice. There's just nothing for you there.
Too much chance.
But outside of that specific person who only, in their purest world, only plays Euro games, outside of that group, I think this game is available and accessible for so many people.
Yeah.
Because it's so streamlined and it's so easy to get into and it's so much fun. And it introduces this aspect that so many people are like, I want to play D&D, but I'm too intimidated to do it. Or I don't have a group, or I, whatever the reason is. This gives you a really good taste.
Yep. So what would you say was your favorite mechanic as you went through the game? Or I guess you could pick more than one if you really want to.
Yeah, it's interesting. I really liked having us roll dice and that kind of determined what our actions were for the round. And then tying that in with having skills that interact with those dice. And that lets you kind of manipulate the dice where it's not just a chance thing all the time. There's different ways to reroll misses and to have different interactions be different things. I was looking at the different characters after we finished our campaign to see what we kind of missed out on.
Right, yeah.
And there was the shaman that I kind of was sad that we didn't play because of how he's this unique character who primarily uses the focus icon to do almost all of his stuff. So, like, I was looking for arrows, you were looking for daggers,
right.
And that was kind of your main focus. He wants focus
and
to
boots,
focus icons.
So I could run off and
that's
open
true. You
chests.
Want to run off and open jewels. That's
yeah.
true.
but
he uses his focus icon to really be able to either attack or heal or support. Like he's that true druid
right.
that does both. And I was like, oh, this is such a cool character. I should have done this. But the archer was super fun. I don't want to take anything away from that.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that because yeah. neither one of us played a magic user. And so I didn't have a clear idea of how a magic user would play. So I'm glad that you were able to look at that.
So, yeah. I mean, magic doesn't have a major, because even the ones we didn't play, there was a tank
uh-huh.
who acts kind of like a barbarian, the shaman who's like your druid.
And which, then that's kind of, I would consider using focus there, to do things
yeah,
like casting
there is,
spells.
There is
there's
some
a
light,
magic aspect
there's some
there.
Light, from what I mean, I just glanced through, so
right.
I might be missing some of it. But what I saw, there's like some light magic, but it's not overly crazy or anything like that. And then the nobleman is kind of like this jack of all trades.
Okay.
Who kind of does a little bit of both of what the barbarian kind of character and the archer would do. And you kind of put them together.
Okay. Interesting.
So,
yeah.
But I think, and we're going to get to the expansions later, but the new character, I think, plays very differently and I think is much more magic focused.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Well, and I was going to say another thing about the skills cards. So
yeah, go for it.
You roll your dice behind, you start with a certain amount of dice, and then you can, the different dice have different colors depending on what their kind of focus is. So I had a lot of yellow dice, which had a lot of boots and daggers because I was a rogue.
Right.
But partway through, I got a dagger that gave me a black die. I got a card that gave me a dagger, which gave me another black die. And so I was able to look at that black die and say, oh, I like this one better because there's a lot more daggers on it. And I'm going to discard this other die that came as a part of my starting pool because you can only have four dice that you're rolling at any point in time.
Per round.
So
like you
even
can change it up.
So if you get another, yes, exactly. So if I got to a point where I just needed to run away and didn't need any knives, then I might take the knife one away and put the other one in. So there's a little bit of strategy there. And the skills cards, though, is what really helps you to build your machine.
Yep.
Because they will work together and they will allow you to use dice and turn them into other dice or use dice combinations to do special combo moves and things like that. And so you're starting with these dice that represent your character's strengths, but then you get a lot of say-so over how you want to focus your character's abilities and strengths
sure.
through the skills cards.
There's lots of skills.
And each character has their own skills built around their focus of, like, for example, I was a rogue, so I had a lot about sneaking in and getting back out without getting injured. And Jared was the forest guard or the archer, so he had a lot about being able to shoot things really well from really far away.
That's true. And I know everyone will play these characters differently, which is so cool because there's that variety of skills. But I remember for me and the way that we had to play based on our party build up, when I got the skill that let me turn arrows into daggers and vice versa, it just felt like such a game changer card for me.
Yeah.
Because then I was like, okay, now we can play the way we've been playing and I can still be helpful instead of getting stuck in the same zone as these enemies and not feeling like I can do anything.
Right, and you'd have to leave in order to shoot them, but then if you leave, then they get these opportunity
yeah,
attacks
it's
sometimes.
It's like all this
and,
stuff.
Yeah.
And so little, like there's different things. Like I gave up something else to have that.
Right.
And so it's this cool, yeah, again, like just getting, like you said, to be able to build out your engine. Very cool.
Yeah. I'd say that I had a couple of maybe small favorites.
Okay.
We've already talked a little bit about the app and the rule book and how well they fit together, how they allowed this very streamlined play. And I'll go ahead and say this. So the way that Jared and I organized the maintenance of the game is that he was in control of all the components and I was in control of the app and the rule book.
Yep.
And so I got really good at how the app and the rule book worked together. And the app would even say, go read this rule because it's going to apply to this combat. And so I could go read that rule and look at it. Or there'd be an icon on the app. And so I could go look in the rule book and I could find it. It was really easy. It was the easiest rule book I've ever had to look stuff up in, I think.
Yeah.
And the app walked you through things really, really well. It also scaled it well. So there's certain rules that don't unlock until different points in the game, which I think is great.
It's
because
really fun. Yeah.
Well, it's fun to unlock the rule. You're like, oh, cool, we got a new rule, and you get to check it off and everything. And that's kind of cool. But What it also does is it scales the game to where it doesn't feel insurmountable at first, because there's fewer rules to remember at first. And then once you play a couple of rounds and you've got the combat skills kind of down, then you add skills and you can modify some of the basic combat actions. And then you get these new rules and it adds different combat actions. I mean, by the end of it, we had traps and doors and secret levers and chests and
difficult
poison
terrain and
difficult terrain and all sorts of things that we didn't have in our first basic dungeon crawl that added wonderful complexity and depth to the game, but would have made it feel overwhelming if we had had all of those aspects at the very start.
Right. I agree with that. I want to add too, just from the other side of that, the components, again, were super easy to navigate. So the tiles are, you can easily split that into three stacks. And then anytime Anna would call out what she needed, I could almost immediately give it to her because the stacks were so easy to just kind of navigate to the one that she needed. And then again, I've already touched on the monster boxes being labeled correctly. And it just, everything has been thought through to where you can kind of learn where everything is, whether it's on the component side or the rule book and app side, and be able to navigate it quickly to keep playing.
And I'll say, as maybe my final favorite mechanic, we mentioned that it had a great story. We haven't told you guys a lot about the great story because...
Go and see.
Yeah, because I want you to be able to experience it for yourself. But that was definitely one of my favorite mechanics. I enjoyed, as the person that was navigating the app, doing voices for the different characters. Yep. And exploring the city and everything it had to offer. Another aspect of, there's certain places you can go outside of the main city where you get to peel off stickers as you uncover and explore different aspects of it. And we didn't even get to explore all of one of the new locations that we found.
That's true.
So if we played through again, we may discover a new part that we didn't even get to see the first round, which is kind of fun. But I think that I loved the story mechanic. The story was very well written. It was not predictable at all what we were going to be up against. I mean, at some points in time, maybe it was. You're like, oh, I don't know. This guy kind of feels like a bad guy, but we don't have a choice to leave him yet.
Yeah,
some things like that. Like, I don't really like the way this is going. But ultimately, it was a surprise what we ended up facing, what ended up happening, and very interesting. Get to a lot of thought went into the background and the history and the lore behind it. And it's telling this story, you feel like you're in another world.
I would agree. So I would agree that the story mechanic is the best part of the game. It is super well done. It is exactly what I was hoping. It's more than I was hoping it would be, actually. I knew that the story would be there and I was excited for that. I did not expect it to be that good. It was superb, and I was
very pleased. Yeah, in a dungeon crawl, you kind of think the story might just be filler between the dungeon crawlers, but it wasn't. It was so much more than that.
Yeah, I would agree. The other mechanic that I'll mention, we've already talked about it, that I really enjoyed. I really liked the party map where you're going around the city and exploring the city and doing that aspect. I don't see that a lot in dungeon crawlers. Like, you really focus on each individual dungeon and not so much the city itself, but there was lots of gameplay that happened there, and I thought that was really good as well.
Yeah, and another thing with the story, you got to stay in the city, explore all these different aspects of the city. You also got to stay with several characters and see different sides of several characters. And so you have these NPCs, but you're with them long enough that they don't really feel like NPCs because you kind of get to start to know their history and another side of them you never saw before and things like that, which I think was well done. The character development that isn't just your own character, but even the characters that you're encountering.
Sure. Okay. So why did this make it to the two top table? We always talk about games here at the two top table that focus on two players and we think plays well at two players. You can play this at one. You can play it all the way up to four. I personally imagine that it is great at all player counts. And I can just see the different dynamics of if we had a full party of four, the way that would change not only the game itself, because the game does a good job of scaling oh, you have three or four players, then you're going to do this setup instead versus, oh, you have two players, then we'll do this.
Yeah.
So that part's cool, but being able to have that full quote unquote party at the table, I think would be in a really cool aspect. And I do think you can simulate that again by controlling two characters at once if you wanted to do that. There's really not too much to keep up with that you couldn't do that. And so if you want that more full party feel, I think that's one way you could do the two-player level, that two-player game. But I also think, and Anna, you can jump in here and after I say this and kind of give me your thoughts. I just really loved having this two-person party adventure together with you. And it very much felt like when we did our Pandemic Legacy game, where we went on this grand adventure together and saved the world and went through this really cool story. I liked this better than Pandemic Legacy. And it does, I mean, it's not a true legacy game, but it is a campaign. And so it gives you that full feel of going through a story together. And I think for any two people that are looking for something like that, or a couple who's interested in D&D, or a couple who's full in on D&D and wants a board game to play together, like, I think all of those scenarios and more, this game really speaks and has a place.
Yeah, definitely. I loved playing it with you as well.
Yeah.
And I even thought as we were going through, man, if we had other people that we were trying to schedule, hey, we're going to play this once a month or something, like, right, we've done with some legacy games or some longer games before, we wouldn't have been able to just sit down and play it for half an hour one night when we wanted to, but then we got tired. You know, there was, there would have been more pressure on it. And so I really liked the way that we did it. And I thought it played excellently at two players. I'm just thinking of some of the complexity of the decisions that you might have to make in the dungeon crawls with more than two players, because it was difficult sometimes to figure out, even between the two of us, what was going to be best, like which people we should go for. Again, you can't see what each other rolled, but you can discuss actions and ideas. And I'm thinking about trying to navigate that with four different people and four different dice. Whew, that would be complex.
I feel like it would be very epic. It would have that more epic kind of feel to it.
Is a good word, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I agree with you. The scheduling aspect. And again, we wanted to see what this would do when you made it, we're not going to commit to finish this in a weekend. Like, I think you and I, it took us, 3 months to fully go through the campaign?
Did we start early October, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then made our way through. And obviously, like, holidays kind of disrupted that some.
Yeah. And I'd say we played through the first act almost straight. Not straight through
one evening,
but straight through in terms of we played it enough days in a row that we didn't clean it up.
Yeah,
but
that's
then we
true.
Had some people over, and I was like, "Oh man, we're gonna have to clean it up." And
I was like, "No, that's great. We can see how it packs.
We can test and see how it comes back out." And it came back out so easily that we were like, "Oh, okay, we don't have to be afraid to clean it up anymore."
That's right, and it really just became like another activity in our lives. And when we had our weekly date night, we were like, "Hey, do you want to do this tonight, or do you want to do something else?" And a lot of times we did want to do this.
Yeah, most date nights the answer was yes.
Yeah. And then most of the time when we didn't do it, it was because life got in the way or we were doing something with family or whatever. And so I think it did exactly what it wants to do as far as being accessible for your schedule. Whether you want to plow through it in a weekend and binge it, or if you want to take your time with it. And we were able to keep up with the story too, even over a 3 month course.
And they do have a story deck that you put together as you go through, where they have pivotal story moments with a picture and then text on a card.
Yeah.
So if you did put it away for 3 months and you don't even remember what your name is anymore, you could get out the story deck and catch up to where you're at.
That's right. So really quickly, because we've gushed over this game a lot, is there anything that you don't really like?
Well, we always ask, what is this game lacking, right?
Nothing.
And Jared and I were discussing that ahead of time, and he was like, I just don't think it's lacking anything.
Nope.
But Jared, I have found something.
Oh, what is it lacking?
I have found a small thing that when I got to the end of the game and I was clicking through and we were trying to see, like, what's it going to do afterwards? What does it do if we get to the end? Can we start a new one? And how does that work? I completely and fully expected some sort of like a finishing stats sheet.
Yeah.
Because you're collecting victory points and trait points, and it has after the battles, like here's the battles won, here's the battles lost. It has your reputation with different characters that you meet. And you can see that throughout the game. So I fully expected at the end of the game some sort of a summary sheet like, you're the heroes everybody's always dreamed of, or you barely escaped with the skin of your teeth, you know, like taking all that into account and kind of giving us a rating of our performance or our score. And we didn't get that. We did get some really good outro stories.
Yeah, it very much fell.
And maybe those would change depending on our performance. I'm not sure because we only played it once.
Yeah. I think it very much fell more in line with like a video game RPG outro.
Yeah.
Where the video game is doing the work for you to keep the calculations, but it's not sharing that with you. But it is giving you the outro story of like this and this and this is happening based on your choices.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I just, the competitive person in me wanted to be like, but how'd we do compared to how the game wanted us to do or how other people might have done? And I didn't get
that.
But
that's like kind of the point though, right? Like the point is to go through the story and make your choices, not to make the best choices and make the right choices. It's choosing the choices.
Okay. I don't know. I don't know about what you just said. That's still something that I thought of that was lacking because I got to that point and I wanted that and expected it and I didn't have it. So that
one thing that I'll mention, and you have noted it down here, and so has most of the internet when it comes to talking about this. I, on the one hand, completely respect and understand why there's no back button. I understand that you want to make that choice matter so much that when you made it, that's it.
That people go to bed because they can't figure out
because
which ally they want.
Because they're not ready. So on the one hand, I love that. And I don't even know if I'm asking for a back button to be able to change my choice. But there were certain times we were playing and you would accidentally tap something and it would move on. And you're like, oh crap, I didn't see what we needed to see.
Right.
Oh, well, you're just going to have to go find the card.
There was one, yeah, there was one time I didn't even get
the
card number because I had clicked forward. There was another time that so the first couple combats are a little bit smaller in terms of the enemies. And then we got a little bit further on and there were way more enemies and way more components. And I didn't realize I had to scroll down on the combat scene or the combat setup screen. And so I clicked next without scrolling down. So I missed a huge chunk of components. Luckily, I was able to go back to the map and see which components and figure out what rules went with them because I'd also accidentally skipped where it said what rules we were supposed to unlock.
Yeah, and then I would kind of guess at which card we were supposed to use because there were like two or three variants of the same card.
Yeah, but then later I found out, and I don't know if this is something that they added because they did add, as we were going through the game, they updated the app. And one of the updates that they made is that the clicking the next button wasn't quite so easy. You had to hold it down and it would like swirl around and load the next one.
Yeah, I agree.
Which means that you're not going to be accidentally going forward without getting the card that you need or something like that. And I also found that in the middle of battle, you can go back and look at the components and look at the map again.
Okay.
I figured that out later on and I don't think I knew that in the moment. But yes, for some of us non-detailed people or people that would accidentally go forward, it would have been nice to have a back button. But I do completely understand the reason to not. And I think that the update they made where you've got to hold down the next button a little bit longer.
That did help.
That did help because you're thinking, you got 3 seconds to be like, okay, am I actually ready to go on before it goes on?
I still wish there was a way and I think it really is just for like combat stuff to be able to make sure you're doing it right. I wish there was a way to kind of navigate a little bit more than we can. But again, I respect the choice because of what it causes. I've never had to go to sleep on a board game choice before deciding what we're going to do. So that was pretty great.
Something like that.
Yes. This game has one expansion already out. I am very excited to get that to the table, Clash of the Immortals. We have not played it yet, but it does create a whole new campaign where you go to a different part of Khan, not the city of Essaphir, which is where you spend most of your time, but to a different part. And so I'm excited to try that out, as well as there's a new mechanic where there's this like party skills that you get instead of individual skills. So there's more coordination with that. There's also a new hero that we talked about earlier. And then, of course, with every good expansion, there's new tiles, quests, locations, enemies, weapons, and items. Then, in February of 2025, is a second expansion, Kin of the Wild, which adds animal companions. Everybody loves a good animal companion. It also adds this leader ability deck to let the leaders of each enemy to be more difficult and to kind of add some more creativity for the enemies themselves. And then, of course, more stuff again. And then the way I interpret it, there's going to be a new story as well, because it looks like you're also going to another part of Khan, but I can't tell for sure. And then they're going to go ahead and do a second print run with this Kickstarter in February 2025. So if that's something that you're interested in getting in on, then that is a good time to jump in on all of it. All right, so before we get into grading and final thoughts, let's talk about price here for a moment, Anna. So right now, to get the base game on Mighty Board's website, it's $89.
Wait, what? What we just played?
Yeah. $89? $89.
Wow. I would have expected $150.
I mean, I definitely think there's a lot in the box for what you get. There's not very many places that you can get it right now outside of the publisher. It's on Amazon, but it's being sold by a third party, so do with that what you will. And it's around the same price. And then CardHaus has it for $70.
Wow. Okay. I guess that's because they're doing a second print, so they're trying to get rid of all their other copies or something.
No, I mean, I think $89 is MSRP.
That is MSRP?
That's what it's looking like, yeah.
I would definitely have put this at an over $100 game just by looking at it and looking at all the components. So, I mean, that's great. Good for whoever wants to buy this game.
Yeah, for everybody. Everybody should go buy this game. No, I think it's an excellent price point. And I think that the expansion is too. The expansion's only $40. I don't know what it is at MSRP, but just looking around online, that's what I'm seeing it. So I think that's a great buy-in. I also think the Kickstarter, obviously you're going to have to wait for it if you go that route. I don't know what the time frame is on that. But Kickstarters usually have a little bit of a discount as well if you go ahead and jump in on that. So maybe that's a way to go as well. I'm definitely going to be looking at the Kickstarter because I'm interested in the second expansion. So we'll have to see. But very excited about that. And I think the price point is well worth it. Let's see, because you're going to get 3, 6, 9. You're going to get 27 sessions at least. Because there's like 3 sessions, or there's 9 sessions per act, and there's 3 acts.
Yeah.
And that's assuming you only go through the campaign one time. So, yeah, your price per play is going to be insanely good. And all the high quality stuff that you get with it, too.
Yep, I agree.
Cool. All right, Anna, I'll let you go first. What are you grading this game?
Well, Jared.
Yep.
I think I got to give it an A+.
Oh.
I think I gotta. The fact that we were sitting here being like, what's wrong with the game? What can we say that's wrong with the game? And the one thing that I came up with was that the game wouldn't give me a grade. I mean, I think that at least puts it at a 99%, which in my book is still an A+.
Nice.
I think, again, the length of play, you can play it for so long and it's unique. The way it scales for different types of people. The artwork and the components are beautiful and wonderful. The story is engaging. Yeah. Even the small in between stuff like the puzzles were engaging and challenging, right? Yep. Some of them were. So yeah, A+ from me. How about you?
Well, no game is perfect. And I have been very hesitant on this podcast to give out a perfect score. Because once I've done that, there's no going back. And then my fear, probably unjustified, but
perfect doesn't have to mean best. You can like get an A+ on multiple English papers.
Hold on. I'm not done yet. Just okay. One second. I'm leading up to something here.
It doesn't mean nothing else could get that score, is what I'm saying.
I know. I understand that. It's a unjustified, there's no like nothing to back this up fear, but it's there. But I'm also going to give this game an A+.
All right.
If we were on the feature table, it would be my 10 out of 10. It is so good. It is just, I mean, I get excited just thinking about it. And I again, Gordon, you did great here. You did an awesome, I know you've called it a labor of love, and you've done every bit of that. And I, again, am just so happy for your success in this and excited to see where you take it and all the different stories. And again, we want to get it back to the table because of how good the story is. I will say we recorded it back in December, so I can't remember what I said. I want to say that I had this as my game of the year. But if I didn't say that, I'm an idiot. And this is 100% 2024's game of the year. Without a doubt.
There you go.
With all that said, we have reached the end of the episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you have feedback or want to give us your thoughts on the game, we would love to hear from you. Links to our socials are in the description. If you don't like socials, I get it. Check out our website at thegametablepodcast.com or shoot us an email at thegametablepodcast@gmail.com or find us on BoardGameGeek. All these links are also in the description. 5-star reviews, subscribing to your podcast player of choice, following us on socials, and joining the conversation on Discord. All of these heroic actions are immensely helpful in growing this podcast. Special thanks to Angie Santiago for our cover art, to Anna Snyder who made the intro and outro music, and to Alexi Chisolin for the How to Play background music. Join us next week as we sit down at the feature table to take a look at Nunatak from Thames and Cosmos. In the meantime, may your dice rolls and your card draws be blessed, and your experiences at the table be ones to remember forever.
See you next time.